You're listening to Ask a Black Doctor, Friday Facts About COVID-19 featuring Dr. Bukasi Dubé. Join us every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. for a half an hour as we discuss issues surrounding the current pandemic, vaccines and distribution, dispel myths, provide facts, and address concerns. We'll also be providing updates about COVID-19 vaccines and discuss how we can build a better culture around Black health. Episodes will be available wherever you listen to podcasts, so head on over to thenumbers.fm for the link to the show. Now let's jump into it. We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor, myself, DJ Ambush, and Dr. Bukasi Dubé. How are you doing, sir? How are you doing this week?
And I'm doing well. Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm good. And I'm sure people are probably tired of us asking every single week, how are you doing? How are you doing? But it's important. It's important that we know.
You got to check in.
Exactly.
You got to check in.
You got to check in.
It's very important.
Not just physically, mentally, spiritually. Where are we all? What's happening? And we should make sure we're having as many of these conversations and checking in on each other as much as possible. What they say, it's always your strong friend that you need to double check in on. So we have a special guest with us this week as we're discussing youth sports during COVID. Doc, you want to go ahead and do the introduction?
All right. So this week we got Forrest Sherman. He's a buddy of mine. He's worked with my daughter in terms of conditioning, and has worked with a lot of kids in the Lake Oswego Tiger Tualatin area and Portland as well. He's a former head coach at Lake Ridge High School, football that is, and currently working with a lot of students that are currently working at Lewis and Clark College. Phil, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing excellent.
Thank you very much for joining us today. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad I was able to make it happen for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's just jump right into it. I know sports was one of the things that our kids were very anxious to get back to, not just school, but just sports and interacting and being able to be social with each other. Forrest, could you speak to some of what that looked like from your end? Some of the steps you had to make sure were in place as far as everyone being safe as they re-engage with sports?
Well, I think the first thing, you know, we had to do as coaches and trainers and teachers and the like is, you know, you had to follow the science, obviously, and you had to listen to the experts and let them advise us on what the steps were going to look like with kids being able to come back to sport from a safety standpoint, right? First and foremost. So once we were able to kind of wrap our heads around that, figure out what that would look like, and they said, okay, coming back to play, you know, athletes are going to need to be able to do X, Y, Z, take these steps. I think that was the easy part, or I shouldn't say the easy part. I should say that was the hard part, because the easy part was we know kids were going to come flocking back to sports. They were going to be overexcited. They're going to be showing up, no mask. They're wanting to be close to each other. And all of those other things that we had to take into consideration, it was going to be difficult to kind of navigate because kids were just going to be just like chomping at the bit to get back to playing and hugging each other and high-fiving and touching and all those types of things. And so, you know, it was kind of a weird deal with making sure that we were allowing them to do that to a certain extent, but making sure that protocol wise and, you know, from a safety standpoint, we were taking care of all the things we needed to take care of.
Makes sense.
But obviously very exciting for coaches, trainers, everybody to be able to come back at it.
Yeah. I could imagine that definitely and understand what you're saying as far as that being, you know, some of the hardest parts, especially for the kids to navigate. They're just so excited to be back around each other and want to get back to what would be considered normal, you know, pre-pandemic. There's been a lot of pushback nationally from parents with regards to mask wearing in some communities, and they're saying it's having adverse effects on the kids and that the kids can't be trusted to continue to wear a mask throughout the day. What's been your experience with that?
Well, I think the experience there is it's kind of the old saying, everybody wants what they want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we say everybody needs to wear a mask, Well, you know, you're going to have a handful of people that say, well, I don't want to wear a mask. That's what I want. Some kids are completely okay with the idea of wearing a mask. And it's the parents that typically will step up for their kid to say, well, I don't want my kid to wear a mask, because it's not necessarily what the kid wants, it's what the parent wants. And so everybody wants what they want. So we run into this situation of, you know, you've got half of the group that is conforming and is okay with it and works for them. And then you got the other side of the group, which is, you know, a bunch of people that don't necessarily want to conform or agree to whatever the rules in place might be, and can make it difficult. But it's my experience that, you know, we had to do this exact same thing. And I work at a private school. And so at a private school, you know, there's the science with COVID and protocols that are put in place from the state. But then there are also protocols and things that are put in place from the school itself, being a private institution. So we were kind of doubled up on, okay, well, here's what the state's telling us we need to do. Well, also here's what the school's telling us we need to do. So, you know, as we started football practices last year, kind of coming out of the COVID, we had to practice in pods. We're on a football field with, you know, 70 football players, and we can only be in groups of 10 or more. We had to try to remain as socially distant as possible. We had to wear masks the entire time. And it was interesting. It was something like I've never experienced being a coach and being on the field with players. But to your point, the kids, once you tell them what they need to do, they'll wrap their minds around it. They're resilient, and they'll dig in and they'll say, okay, let's make it happen. And that's been my experience at the youth level right now. I still train a bunch of kids. At the high schools, I still attend a bunch of high school games and talk to a bunch of my high school athletes. And I see the dynamics when I go to high school games. And for me, I just feel like the kids want to play. They just want to play. If you tell me I can play, but you tell me I have to wear a mask, I'll wear a mask. I just want to play. Right. That's where they're coming from.
I like that mentality. Hey, Fo, I got to ask you something. You said something to the effect that you had all these protocols put in place, people wearing masks, etc., and, you know, physical distancing. How many outbreaks did you guys get?
As a football program?
As a football program, yeah.
We had one kid in our football program test positive, but it was from him being exposed off campus away from the
football activities. Yeah.
Wow. So
that's precisely what I'm trying to get at. That
one, you know, kid in over a year.
Wow.
Yeah. Those precautions that you put in place, right? Those mitigation factors that you put in place prevented a lot of outbreaks, and they ensured that you guys were able to continue with your with practicing and playing your football games. So it sounds like things worked out really well.
It did. Yeah, they did. I think you're right. And sadly though, I think I'm a believer and I'm a realist, you know, and I look at things, if 1 + 1 = 2, I just sort of do the math that way. Right. And if you look at putting protocols in place to protect us against an outbreak, I'll take that as okay, well, that probably helped us. But then there are the folks on the other end of the spectrum that say, well, that didn't have anything to do with it. You know what I mean? So, but me personally, I will take taking precautionary measures to help me or help others be able to continue to live our lives the way we live our lives and play and compete and do all of those types of things, if that's something that I feel like I need to do to help me, and not be one to sort of rock the boat, if you will, and go against the grain. And at the college level, they made it real simple for us. It was, we're a private university again. These are the rules that we're putting in place, the mandates outside of what the state is asking. And it's kind of either you're in or you're out type of deal. And some people are all in and some people straddle the fence and some people are completely out. You're always going to have groups in those three boats, I guess.
So when you said they made it easy for you, I'm assuming in the way of just having some clear-cut determinations of what they will and won't tolerate. So it took a lot of the guesswork out of you having to have these discussions with any of the athletes.
100%. Yep. Clear-cut definition of this is what we want. These are our expectations. This is what we need everybody to do. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Perfect. That's all I need to know.
So that makes life easy for the, life is much, much, much easier for the coaches in terms of, you know, hey, my hands are tied. I got to follow the rules just like you have to follow the rules. So it makes life that much easier. Yeah. So I was fortunate enough to be the person at the school director and help develop the protocols at Lewis and Clark. I know we had a few conversations about that and how things were going this past year.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't know if we've had any outbreaks in any of our sports. I can't think of all the sports that are playing right now with cross country and soccer and football. I don't think I've heard if there's been an outbreak. I know I've heard because we get emails on a daily basis at the college. If a student tests positive, the email comes out just to inform the community that somebody did test positive. And I think because there's that structure involved with sport, you know, if you're not in a sport, you're just kind of living your life, running around, doing your thing.
So some people might argue that even participating in sports would put athletes at a higher risk. But from what we're hearing already, as long as you're following protocols, you know, backed by science and the data, there are ways to participate in all of these sports and be safe, which is really, really encouraging news. I think the other side of that, too, Dr. Bukosi mentioned in some of our earlier episodes just how important it is to stay active, how important it is to be exercising and doing things that help keep your immune system and your body going, your system going. So I can imagine how just getting back out there for some of these athletes and some of these students is exactly what they need in a system that provides a very, very safe environment, which is great. You mentioned that they were practicing in pods. What are the rules and conditions around sharing equipment?
Well, when we started, it was interesting because first they didn't want us to share equipment. They wanted us to just not have much equipment out there at all. So we were just sort of going through the motions with our practices. And then once we were able to actually share equipment, well, it's different for like quarterbacks. Quarterbacks all have their own football. But if you're touching a bag or doing some sort of a drill where there's, you know, equipment in place, we would literally have coaches out with a disinfectant spray.
Wow.
And towels that, you know, per drill, if there were three or four kids in the drill touching the bag, as soon as they got done and we were rotating to the next drill, we'd come right through and we clean the bags off and we just kind of keep going. So, I mean, again, we just kind of raised the level of safety out there on the field and kind of did whatever we needed to do to make sure that everything was clean and all the spaces were clean and safe. And that's kind of what we had to do.
I think this highlights how the science has evolved over the last 18 or so months, where at the very beginning, when we didn't have all the information with regards to how this virus spreads, and we thought fomite transmission was a big player in spreading the disease. But we have since learned that it is not as big of a deal as we initially thought, and hence all these wiping protocols have been relaxed a little bit. The CDC still has recommendations, right, that people can take a look at CDC and OHA, as well as OSAA, which is the youth regulatory body here in Oregon. Just advising folks on what to do and how to make sure that they don't spread the disease in while playing sports.
Do you see the existing protocols being something that could last post COVID? I mean, I can imagine just taking that level of care, whether it's the mask or wiping down equipment, that lowers the rate of any disease spread or any virus spread. So just kids just not, you know, transferring flu and different cold symptoms or whatever else might take them out of the season or, you know, a couple of games, this could be preventative for that too, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's, I think we've talked about this in the past that last year we saw the lowest number of flu cases and flu deaths, flu-related deaths that we've ever seen since we started keeping track of that. And so it tells us that the preventative measures that we took for COVID also work for other respiratory illnesses like the flu. So these things work and they're very effective. Maybe not, I'm not entirely advocating that we go back to wiping things down as vigorously and as religiously as we did in the past, because that also has an impact, right? Look at we'll look, you know, 10 years from now and say, man, look at all that plastic that we ended up, you know, throwing in the ocean and throwing everywhere else where we throw it, right? From all the protocols that we put in place, all the masks that are ending up in dumpsters, and it has an environmental impact. Yeah. So we have to take those things into consideration.
Well, you know, it's funny though. Ironically, it took COVID to get the world to just be more sanitary. I've always been a sanitary person. You go to the bathroom, you wash your hands, you touch something, you sit down. I sit down at a table at a restaurant. First thing I would always do is ask somebody there, hey, can I wipe my table down? You know, just little things that certain people have always done, but that the large masses never really did. And so all of a sudden here comes COVID, and all COVID says basically is, hey, if you guys want to defeat this thing, you got to be extra, extra sanitary. And it made everybody say, oh, okay, I got to really focus on wiping things down, right. not sharing cups and bottles and things with other people, and wash my hands, keep my spaces clean, all those types of things that we should have just been doing as people anyway.
Yeah.
Elevate that for us. And so it's pretty ironic that happened for me, that's what it took, when that's how we should be living our lives anyway, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's simple, you know, hygiene. You go to the bathroom, hygiene. Wash your hands. I mean,
it's still amazing to watch people not wash their hands in public restrooms. Like I went out to, I think it was to a movie a couple of weekends ago, and hit the restroom afterwards, and this gentleman just left the urinal, walked straight out. And I'm like, really? During COVID? Really? Like, not even COVID's going to make you? Okay. Wow. That's great. Okay.
One of the biggest places that you notice it and you see it in full effect is in a gym. Mm. Mm-hmm. You know, in a gym with so many people in a gym and touching pieces of equipment and sharing mats and different things like that. And I think about 10 years ago, even let's not even say 10, let's say two. Think about 2 years ago. You come into the gym, you see people using mats, touching equipment, doing whatever, sweating on it, and just putting it back.
Yep.
And you shouldn't be doing that in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, you should clean your equipment if you use it and you sweat on it. And then, but now, of course, you can't come into the gym without a mask. You can't go from place to place without making sure you wipe down your equipment that you just used. But that's just general common courtesy for me. It's if I'm on a treadmill and I got a great workout in and I'm sweating all over the thing, I'm just going to clean it off for the next person. That's just common courtesy. Common courtesy is kind of, you know, it's a lost art. And COVID brought it back for us, I think.
Yeah, it was not so common.
When it comes to just cleanliness, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So masks aren't required during competition, correct?
That's true.
So that only applies when they're actively playing. When they're on the bench, do they put masks on? But they practice.
Actually, yeah.
How does that work exactly?
Yeah, you bring up a very good point. So during active competition, masks are not required. But while kids, while athletes are on the sidelines, they are required to wear masks. So the important thing to remember is that all of these things, right, you have to weigh your risks and benefits. So you have to think about, hey, is this going to increase the likelihood of spreading the disease, or is this going to lower the risk of the likelihood of spreading the disease? And but what OHA and what ODE and OSAA have said is that while you're actively competing, please wear, you do not have to wear your mask. While you're on the sidelines, you have to wear a mask so that you stop the spread of the disease. And if you're going to be working out in a weight room, you need to be wearing a mask as well.
Could you explain the science behind that for some of the people that may not?
That's exactly right for us. I mean, that's kind of how we're operating. And it's different when you're in your own bubble, though, too. You know, if you're interacting with the same people that you interact with on a daily basis, who may be vaccinated. And if they are, you know, you sort of create that bubble.
And what's important to note as well is that spectators are required to wear masks as well, right? So if your family, friends, or, you know, coming to watch a game, I just remind them that, hey, masks are required at all these games. I heard Pat Island, the director of OHA, talking about his recent visit to an Oregon State football game. And he was impressed by how many people were wearing masks and how many people were following the physical distancing requirements. So that's heartening to hear, right? It means that we're gonna reduce the spread of this COVID-19 at sporting events.
Can you explain the science behind why it's not required to wear the mask while playing versus sitting on the bench?
So we got a lot of pushback from folks regarding kids fainting or kids having significant shortness of breath while actively playing. And so there was an accommodation made that, you know, because of this exertion while you're actively playing, you're not required to wear a mask. The other thing is you're not in close contact with the same people you're not spending 15 minutes at a time in very, very close contact with people when you're actively playing, because you're moving around, right? And so there is it's different from when you're sitting on the bench and you're next to players, next to other, you know, coaches, trainers, and other athletes. So that's where the difference is.
Thank you. It's very, very important that people hear that, because that's one of the things they'll attack. Well, why is it safe for these people and it's not safe for them? And it doesn't make any sense. I'm so glad we have the opportunity to really boil it down to the, you know, minutia and really explain that. Forrest, did you have something to add to that?
No. I just said, okay. I agree. I agree totally, because that's exactly how sports works. And going back to the science of things, as far as the way that it's spread, it's a close contact is considered, you know, 15 minutes or longer. Right. And in sport, you're very rarely standing with or next to, even if you're competing with them face to face, you're not in their face that close for 15 minutes. No. That doesn't happen in sport, in any sport.
Right. So before we shut things down, before we wrap the episode, I have to pick you guys' brains about this Kyrie situation.
Oh, man. Man, oh, man.
I am at a total loss, and I don't even know what to say about Kyrie anymore, because sadly, I think Kyrie is always coming from things from a totally different perspective. than what the actual situation at hand might be. And so, like I heard this morning, you know, one of the things they said about Kyrie was that his situation regarding him was he was still doing research or something like that. And for me, it's like, what are you doing research on at this point? The research has been done for well over 2 years now.
Right.
So what question? No, something about he still has questions. So what questions could he still have at this point? I don't get it.
You know, I'm with you, Paul. Yesterday I was at an event. I did a vaccine confidence event in Southeast Portland. And one of the moderators that was on the stage with me, man, she was incredibly articulate, Erin Waters. She said, you know, most people don't have the background to do research, right? Most people don't have the education to do the research. And we, when people are saying that they're still doing research, it's just an excuse to not want to take the vaccine.
Yeah.
I agree with that sentiment. I respect people who are still, who don't have confidence in the medical system for one reason or another. But at the same time, to say that people doing research is not entirely accurate, nor honest.
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot of people, it takes a lot of education to fully understand and to fully to read and fully understand the research that's been done. let's be honest with each other. Let's meet each other where we're supposed to. Let's be truthful, right?
Right.
Let's talk to each other in a way that we respect each other. I just want to give a shout out to the executive director of OSAA, Peter Weber, he's done an amazing job engaging OHA and ODE in terms of coming up with protocols that ensure that our kids get back to sports in a safe and in a safe manner.
Excellent. Yeah, I agree with both of you. It's very rare that we hear someone who's been resistant or lack confidence in it say, "I've done the research and now I'm good with it." There's never a positive reaction from the research that's being conducted. It's usually, I'm just waiting it out. It's like they're doing the research and maybe they're waiting for some lab results to come back from their research teams. Like, what are we talking about? I just say you just don't trust it. Okay. I can respect that a little bit more.
Yeah.
But no, thank you.
But my question is, the people that say they have questions or they're doing the research, right? What exactly are they doing the research on? And are they doing the research on like what are the effects of the vaccine or what are they doing the research on? Because the argument there is, if I'm saying I have questions about the vaccine or I'm doing the research on the vaccine, take everything else that you do in your life or that you've done in your life and things that you've exposed yourself to, not knowing exactly the effects that it may have on your body that we do on a daily basis.
Right.
You know, if my knee hurts, I take some Advil or some Tylenol. Have I done the research on Advil and Tylenol and what it does to my body when I take it? Probably right. Not extensively, no. But what do? I take it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I take it. But now all of a sudden with the vaccine, everybody who doesn't want to take the vaccine is saying for whatever reasons, they're unsure that they haven't researched it enough or they have questions about it still, when I'm sure Kyrie as an athlete from his high school years all the way through the pros has probably taken something, done something, whether it be a cortisone shot or whatever it might be, supplements, you know, what have you, that somebody recommended to him that he probably hadn't fully done the research on. but he did it anyway. But now all of a sudden it's a vaccine and everybody's taking it, but he doesn't want to take it, but it's because he has questions or he hasn't done the research on it. So it's always, it's so confusing to me.
Yeah. And he has the rest of the NBA as data, right? He has his teammates.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has the rest of the NBA as data. He can look to the left and right of him. No one's grown a third arm or passed the way. Like, nothing weird has happened, Kyrie. You're
absolutely
self-inflicted at this point.
That's that. Yeah, you just hit it right on the head. He has the rest of his team and the rest of the NBA as living proof that maybe the vaccine is okay to take, you know?
And he actually now has a very easy way out, right? Andrew Wiggins is a very good example with the Warriors, right? He was also doing his research and has taken the vaccine after doing his research. So, Kyrie, come on, be a good example to the community and take the vaccine.
Seriously, seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if anybody in his family has taken the vaccine.
Mm. Yeah.
I'd be curious to know if mom, dad, brothers, sisters have been vaccinated in his family, or if it's a whole family thing. I would guess that somebody in his family probably has been vaccinated.
Yeah, that's a real good question. Maybe we'll get some insight on that as things continue on. Thank you guys so much. Thank you so much for us. It's great having you on today. Look forward to touching base with you in the future.
Hey, I appreciate you having me. Great to meet you. And anytime you need me, feel free to get a hold of me and I'm happy to help out.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. We will catch you guys next week on Ask a Black Doctor. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Peace.
Peace.
Awesome. Take care, guys.
All right. Now.
All right, thanks, Paul.
Thanks for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor, airing every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. right here on The Numbers. If you missed it, you can find the link to the full episodes on our website at thenumbers.fm. You can also subscribe to the podcast on all streaming platforms. Be sure to rate and leave a comment. If you have questions you'd like answered on future episodes, you can submit them through our website or the link in our bio on Instagram and Twitter.